This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sign of my learning, by not holding to his views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
So tonight we're going to be exploring compassion, and before we move into that topic, I did want to acknowledge that of course everything I say at any of these sessions is informed by centuries of people who've been practicing the different practices, the meditations, the mindfulness, the compassion, and last week when I was doing the session on working with the judgmental mind, I meant to explicitly acknowledge the work of Donald Rothberg. He is one of many teachers who you can find teachings on Dharma Seed. Some of you will access Dharma Seed. He's done a lot of work in working with the judgmental mind, and I used some of his approach in what I did last week. And this week, of course, in looking at compassion has been a topic which has been explored theoretically, been explored in practice, been explored through the research more recently by humans across the globe, even though we're here. And the compassion practices that I'm most familiar with do have Buddhist origins. Compassion, of course, isn't Buddhist. Compassion is a human capacity, a human quality. Some of you may have be consumers of TED Talks. A woman who won the TED Prize some years ago, Karen Armstrong, used her prize to start the Charter for Compassion. And she started life her working life, I guess you'd call it that, as a Catholic nun. And so compassion is something that, as much as suffering unifies humans, so too does compassion, our response to the suffering of others. And of course, compassion has many directions. Compassion primarily has three directions. In a general sense, we can think of compassion as a sensitivity to suffering and a motivation to alleviate or protect from suffering. And often when we think of compassion, we're thinking of it coming from us out to a third person, another person, a person who is suffering in some way, shape or form. And we'll talk about suffering a little bit more in a moment. So that's the primary way we often think of compassion. That movement, that sensitivity to another's suffering, and that movement to engage, act in some way to alleviate suffering. Of course, compassion can flow in two other directions primarily as well. We can receive compassion when we're suffering from others. And then the third way that compassion has a main manifestation is when we offer compassion to ourselves in situations when we are suffering. So if you just pause for a moment and think about, which of those three flows of compassion to another, from us to another, from another to us, receiving compassion, or from ourselves to ourselves, is most comfortable, is most familiar? Just let that one sit. I'm not asking for an answer at the moment, but just have a sense of, where do I practice it in my life? Where am I most comfortable in my life? Where does compassion show up? Where might be the places which is a bit more challenging, in fact, to be open to compassion? How do I feel about receiving compassion? How comfortable am I in offering compassion to myself when I'm experiencing a difficulty? Is it something else that jumps up rather than compassion in those situations? As with all of the talks here, it's something to be investigated for ourselves. It's something to be explored. As we engage in the different explorations and practices, it's intended that we are trying it on, investigating for ourselves and seeing how it fits. Nothing I say is offered as dogma to be accepted at face value or to be experimented with. If we think about compassion in terms of a response to suffering, suffering can sound quite big, but there's all sorts of suffering, little sufferings, middle-sized sufferings, big sufferings. You know, you might have a blister on your heel from a new pair of shoes. It might be that, you know, one that happened to me recently was I had a cold and I couldn't hold my niece's new baby. And that was, I would have liked to it. Oh, it's a pity. It's a bit sad. You know, it's very low-level suffering, as with the head cold kind of thing. Or it could be bigger. You know, we could have lost a loved one. We could receive a diagnosis of a terminal illness. We could be retrenched from a job. Suffering comes in so many forms and impacts all of us. None of us are exempt from suffering in some way, shape or form. We might not call it suffering, but pain and suffering is part of the stuff of life, as are the 10,000 joys that go with the 10,000 sorrows. And so we can see suffering as having a universal aspect to it. It's part of being a human. It's something that unites us, in fact. But often when we're experiencing it, we can actually feel isolated and separate from everybody else who, if you look on their Facebook page, seem to be doing just fine. I'm going to invite you to think about a situation where you experienced a sense of compassion, where you felt compassion in a situation. So see if you can bring something to mind. And it as I said, it can be little, it can be middle-sized, big. Just see if you can recall a situation where you experienced compassion. And now, I'm thinking primarily where you felt moved to by the suffering of another. So that first form of compassion. Feel free to close your eyes if it helps in this little reflection. See if you can identify an experience where compassion arose for you. And bring some detail of that situation to mind. Where were you? Who was the other person? Or being? It could have been an animal, something else. And importantly, what were the qualities that you called on that supported a compassionate response? What other qualities, what other strengths did you call on in that situation that supported or enabled a compassionate response? And in that compassionate response, how was the experience for you? How did you feel? What were the thoughts? What were the feelings? How was your body? How was that experience for you when compassion was present? Good if there are some people who are willing to share. There are two main questions I was asking. What were the other strengths? What were the other qualities that you needed to call on that supported a compassionate response? So I'm not so interested in the story of what happened, but just unpicking it a little bit and saying, oh, what else was there? Can anybody happy to share an example? Yeah.
I work in palliative care.
Mm.
So one of the main parts of the job is being compassionate at all times. Sometimes I go along the mantra that less is more by a simple touch, a reach out and a touch, and just simply listening is often enough for somebody to feel comfortable and feel reassured and supported.
So some of the other things that you're calling on, maybe a capacity to listen, to hear.
Yeah.
And there's a sense that I got as you described that of not needing to come in with your own agenda kind of thing into that situation, but coming in a very receptive state yourself, receptive to where the other person's at and what's going on for the other person. So. A lot of your ego not very loud at that time, and you're nodding as I say that. So there are some of the other qualities that support that compassionate response. And when you are at your compassionate best, how does that feel for you?
It's a nice feeling, because you feel a connection.
Yeah, so a nice feeling, connection, rewarding. And after we do the meditation, I'll actually be talking about some of the research into it, which is very much in line of compassion is a state that is very resourcing for ourselves. And we need to distinguish compassion from empathy. Empathy is... often a forerunner to compassion, and empathy is that state where we might be resonating with another, we can feel their pain, we have a sense of what's going on for them, and we're in some way experiencing what they're experiencing, even though we know that we are different to the person. And empathy doesn't take the next step of engaging in the intention to alleviate. This is how they're talking about it in the research. So empathy is that resonance, compassion is that engagement of the motive to alleviate the suffering. So empathic resonance, and some of the research into this is the Professor Tanya Singer working in Germany at the Max Planck Institute, working in this area, looking at how we support the cultivation of compassion and the difference between empathy. And she says, actually, when we talk about compassion fatigue, that's a bit of a misnomer, because compassion is something that is supportive and increases our own well-being. We should talk about it as empathic resonance fatigue or empathic overload fatigue, because we haven't actually moved out of that sitting with the pain and the suffering of the other. When we actually move into the compassionate motive, that feeling, the well-wishing, the desire, the engagement of doing something for the benefit of the other, that actually engages very different circuits in the brain. When we're in the empathic resonance, the brain circuits that are engaged are the pain circuits. When we're in the compassionate motive, the circuits of the brain that are engaged include affiliation, social connection, and even the reward part of the brain. So it's a very positive first-person experience when we are in that state. How about somebody else? When you thought about a compassionate situation, what were some of the other strengths or qualities that you called on?
I have my daughter's cat died the other day, mm-hmm. and I felt compassion towards her, and I went out and bought a card with a cat on it, to make sure that I felt that was a connection.
Yeah, absolutely, and a connection, a desire for her to be. Help support her in her suffering, and an action to tell her that you're there and connected and thinking of her. Yeah, yeah. What supported you to do that? What other strengths or qualities?
Her sadness.
Yeah, so you're responding to her. And what about you? I'm just trying to think what else might have supported that.
Well, I like the cat too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and so a real sense of shared suffering as well. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
and her children as well.
Yeah, and in the buying of the card, and you presumably wrote something in the card and you gave the card to her. How did you feel when you were doing that action?
Oh, I had the other lady that worked there looking through all the cards for a cat card, and I said it must be a cat card.
And so you eventually got your cat card,
yes,
and you wrote in it.
Yes.
And how was it when you were thinking about,
very writing? Close. I felt close to the cat and to her.
Yeah, yeah. So a positive feeling.
Yeah, much so.
Okay. Yeah. And so compassion will often be surrounded by other feelings and emotions, and is a state which can be resourcing for us. Anybody else? One last person. Yeah.
Yeah, another animal story. I had a dog that died at 17 and a half years old.
Mm.
I had to make the decision.
Mm.
Compassionately, I did.
Mm.
There was no field of after.
Mm.
It was hard.
Mm.
So I understand the compassion in getting the field of it.
Mm.
But there can also be compassion with no field of
it. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, a very difficult situation and
wasn't
decision.
Wasn't the right thing, but nonetheless.
Yeah. And what were the? You have a sense that it was a compassionate action, what you did.
Yeah.
Yeah. What supported you to take that compassionate action, which is hard?
The dog's quality of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the caring, did it require some courage?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Compassion often requires courage. We can think of compassion as being soft is gorgeous. It can, you know, it has a lot of softness and gentleness as part of it often, but it can sometimes really require us to be strong and courageous and sit with discomfort. And we don't like sitting with discomfort. We don't like sitting with suffering. Right back in the first week, we talked about, what do? We do all sorts of things to avoid sitting with discomfort. And the suffering of another is a hard thing to sit with. And in some ways, that's where the mindfulness comes into supporting compassion. Because mindfulness, we're strengthening our presence, our groundedness, our capacity to be with what is. And bit by bit by bit, we build up greater capacity to be with more and more uncomfortable situations and remain open. There's a great, approach that I've heard from Pema Chodron. She might have got it from somebody else. She's an ordained Tibetan Buddhist nun in the US, many of you will know. She talks about, and I've sat up in the chair as I started talking about it, she talks about the soft front and the strong back. And even as I mention that now, maybe just tune in at a physical level to your soft front and strong back. A soft front which is sensitive and open and receptive, and a strong back, which is courageous and strong, stable. And so feeling into that bodily and coming home to that combination, that balance between the soft front and the strong back, making this our home, also supports us to be available and compassionate in more and more situations.
Oh, mine was another animal story, I'm sorry, but my friend's dog died about a week ago, and she sent a generic message around, and I responded, but I kept thinking about it all day, and I thought, I've got to go and see her, and I was half expecting her family to be there, her sister and brother and all sorts of things. When I got there, there was no one there, and I just took over some chocolate biscuits and went for coffee, and she had done that to me about 6 years prior, and the comfort that gave me, I wanted to give that back, or I hope that she felt that as well. And they were both, her and husband were in absolute tears of this dog, and no one had visited them. So I was scared of going, because I thought, oh, the family's going to be there, maybe I'm not the best person to go. And I did get a lot back from it. Yeah.
And
because
so
I remember what that did for me when someone did the same thing for me all those years ago, and the little bit of comfort I got from it.
And such a useful example, because you name one of the obstacles that we can...
I was scared to do it.
Exactly.
I was scared to go, because I thought...
Fear. Am I going to do the right thing? Am I going to say the right thing? Am I going to be able to actually respond effectively to this suffering? Fear of stuffing it up will often stop us acting. So fear can get in the way. And so you needed courage. You needed the strong back.
Is that the strong back?
The strong back
about.
That said, come on, come on. Yeah. So the softness was there, the connection was there with the soft front. And then the strong back gives you the courage and strength to do it. And, you know, in different circumstances, we need more courage, more strong back than soft front. In others, we need more soft front than strong back. You know, if Paul Gilbert, who is one of the leading researchers and also developed compassion-focused therapy, he says, you know, if you're a firefighter, you're engaging compassionately to save lives and that kind of thing, but you don't want too much soft front. You want, you know, a really strong back, because you need to be making decisions which need crystal clear thinking and moving you forward into difficult, dangerous situations at times. Yeah, so the courage helped you overcome the fear that was saying, shouldn't I? And how was it for you when you did it?
I was so glad I did it.
Yeah.
I could have talked myself out of it.
Yeah.
But I think I'll regret it if I don't. And yeah, it was very, I think they really appreciated it too.
Yeah. Thank you. There's a great quote which I tried to actually find the source of, and I haven't been able to. It must have been a secondary reference, and I don't even know where I got it from, except it's too strange that I wouldn't have made it up, I don't think. When we're thinking about our capacity to be with suffering, which is a fundamental requirement to then act compassionately, Freud is said to have said that neurosis is a refusal to open to suffering. So when we get into that denial, avoidance, runaway, escape, he sees that as being a source of neurosis. And so what we're doing as we strengthen our capacity to be with discomfort, suffering, is opening ourselves up to more and more of life. Being able to integrate more and more of the different things that we all experience. And it's counterintuitive in part, that choosing to turn towards suffering isn't always easy. It's often not easy. We've had some examples here where it wasn't easy to be compassionate, where it does take that strong back and does take practice. And we will be doing a compassion practice today. The compassion is a fundamental practice in Tibetan Buddhism in particular. We know in Buddhism there's the four Brahma Viharas: metta, kindness, loving kindness, friendliness; karuna, compassion; mudita, taking joy in others' good fortune, gladness; and then the fourth one, equanimity. And I'm going to be talking about equanimity next week. So those four all are interrelated. And one way that I've heard compassion described is compassion is the heart, the loving kindness that trembles in response to a situation of suffering. So it's activated and engaged and responding to suffering. So clear connection between loving kindness and metta and compassion, karuna. I think I will. I'm almost chickened out just then. I planned to do something that's a little bit different to what we normally do. And then I thought, oh no, shall I do it? Nearly didn't. Ah, strong back. A bit of courage. I'm going to ask you just to stand up. And so sort of in more or less a circle. That's going to be a bit weird with the chairs. So some of us around the side, some of us down the back, some of us around the front. So that you can see the group, so that everybody can sort of see everybody else. And I'll just sit in the back. So, and this isn't so much to get a sense of each of us as individuals, but more a sense of all of us being part of the stuff of life. And I'm just going to ask you to raise your hand if what I say applies to you. So if you could raise your hand if you've ever experienced physical pain and suffering. Okay. Down. Could you raise your hand if you've experienced emotional pain and suffering? Could you raise your hand if you've ever been sad and disappointed? If you've ever been angry and hurt? and I should be putting up my hands too. I'm not sitting here in any way different. How about putting up your hand if you've ever felt unworthy or inadequate? If sometimes you worry and are frightened. If you sometimes long for friendship. If you want to be caring and kind to others. Yeah, want to be and am, lovely. How about if you want to be content with what life's given you? How about if you wish to be free from pain and suffering? If you'd like to be safe and healthy?
Hmm?
If you'd like to be happy?
Oh.
If you'd like to be loved?
Ah.
Okay. Thanks for that. Come on back. Maybe wait there just before we come on back. Just maybe wait there because, you know, one of the things I was hoping to make it even more clear than we already know is that these challenging things that come into our lives from time to time are part of life. And when we move into the practice of offering compassion imaginatively, it's really useful just to recognize that, all of us want to be free from suffering. All of us suffer. All of us have the different experience of it. So maybe just as we're standing, closing your eyes for a moment, and we saw our fellow meditators pretty much in the same boat as us. So maybe just for a moment, tuning into the soft front. Tuning into the soft front. Might even have a sense of opening through the front, opening through the chest, opening through the heart. And wishing everybody here well. Wishing just in whatever way makes sense to you. Sometimes it can work to have a sense of on the out breath, maybe free from suffering. May you have the resources you need to meet the challenges of life. May you be well and happy. All of us here at times suffer, and all of us at times have the capacity to offer freedom from suffering to each other. Care, kindness. Okay, so coming back down into your seats, and we'll be doing a bit more of that. Just getting into it. And there's a whole lot of different people here. And yet we had so much in common when we look at it in those terms. So much in common, the stuff of life we have in common. And in the practice that we'll be doing, we will be offering compassion more and more broadly. And so just like us, there are other people, everybody in the world, at times has physical pain, at times has emotional pain, at times feels unworthy, at times is angry, at times is wants to be loved. All of this stuff is universal. And so at that level, can we connect with the other humans of the planet? That's the invitation. And sometimes we can and sometimes we can't. So, you know, sometimes it's available to us and sometimes it's a bit more challenging. So rather than need to get into having to work with the judgmental mind, if it's not available today, just give it your best shot and let that be good enough. Otherwise we can beat ourselves up. Oh, I should be feeling more compassionate, or I should be feeling more empathy, or I should be da-da-da. that's not a particularly compassionate way to respond to ourselves in the moment if we're giving it our best shot and, oh, actually not a lot's happening. So let's see how we go in a meditation, opening to compassion, touching compassion. I'll start the meditation inviting you to bring somebody to mind who you're close to, somebody that you know is suffering. Now, the important thing with compassion as a practice is that we don't stay in that empathic resonance where we are just in the suffering with them. So we touch it, and then we come into the well-wishing. May you be free from suffering. May you be well and happy. If we just stay in the suffering with them, it's actually not a very effective place to be. So we intentionally practice touching the suffering, opening to it, and then moving into a sense of desire, well-wishing to alleviate the suffering. And we do this imaginatively as a meditation, and the more we do it as a meditation, as a practice, it then enables us to do that in life. So it's priming us, if you like. It's priming us to open to suffering, acknowledge suffering, and then move into that desire to wish them well, desire that they be free from suffering, to be open to engage with that suffering. Just before we go into the practice, any comments or questions about what we're going to do? Okay. So if we want to turn off the lights, I made it easy either way. We start allowing the attention to come into the body, really feeling into the body in the seat. Having a sense of the body resting, and maybe tuning into that idea of a soft front and a strong back. You may even have a sense of openness through the front of the body, a receptivity through the front of the body, and maybe lifting the spine a little, feeling the groundedness, the stability of the back. And it can be interesting to breathe as if we could breathe in through the front of the chest. So as if the breath was coming in through the chest. Of course, this is an imaginative sense. So breathing in through the chest and breathing out from there. You can have a sense of breathing into the heart space and breathing out from there. We know that this human mind loves to wander. If it gets caught up in sounds or thoughts or something else, not a problem. Gently acknowledging that, and for the moment coming back into the body and the body breathing. we can use the body and the breath as an anchor for attention. Once the attention is reasonably settled and reasonably stable, if you choose to, and you don't need to choose to do this practice, you could stay with the breath, you could stay with the body if that's what you prefer. But if you'd like to experiment with this practice to cultivate compassion, bringing to mind somebody in your life, somebody that you can open to and touch their suffering that's not going to be overwhelming, but somebody that you can, you know and care about in your life who has some form of suffering, whether it's an illness or lost a job or a relationship's not going well, or they might have an addiction. The form of suffering isn't important. And bringing that person to mind and holding them in the mind's eye, and you've chosen them because there's some challenge that they are responding to at the moment, there's some suffering in their life, noticing how it feels to turn towards that yourself, not getting swallowed up by it, but allowing yourself to be sensitive to their suffering. And then with them in your mind's eye, connecting with that deep felt wish that they be free from suffering, that they find whatever it is that they need to help them respond to this situation. And you can use words if that's supportive, just silently to yourself. May you be free from suffering. May you have the resources, the support. May you find what you need to respond to this situation. I care about this suffering. May you be well and happy. May you know peace. Holding that deep felt wish for them to be free of their suffering. And extending it, maybe even having a sense of extending it on the out breath, if that helps. May you be free from suffering. May you have what you need to respond to this challenge. May you find the resources, the support, inner and outer. May you find peace. it's extending, offering care and compassion to those that we care about is a starting point. But in this practice, we move from there, and we can move to people that we don't even know. And I was just listening to the sounds in the waiting room at this GP's after hours service that we are next to. And there'll be parents in that waiting room who are concerned about their kids. There'll be kids who are sick. There'll be young people, old people, middle-aged people. And of course, it's just up the hill a little is the hospital. Maybe having a sense of the different experiences of suffering that are within a few hundred meters of us here. People we don't know. Can we open the heart and offer them too our care, our compassion? Having a sense of the people in the hospital, the people here at the GP's after hours service, may be free from suffering. May be free from the causes of suffering. Connecting to a deep felt wish for their well-being. May you find the support you need to meet this suffering, this situation. May you find peace. Staying steady and present and open. In the face of suffering. And of course, this hospital setting that we're in, we can sort of radiate beyond that as well. Throughout the community, people are meeting all sorts of challenges. There's all sorts of suffering, big and small. Can we remain engaged and alive and motivated in the face of that suffering? Across the planet. Having a sense of extending compassion from where you're sitting outwards, so that wherever it meets suffering, it offers kindness. Discriminating, without exception. Suffering is suffering. As best we can, staying open and caring wherever that kindness that we're extending out meets suffering. course, it's not just humans that suffer. We've heard tonight. Other beings are suffering too. So as we extend our care and compassion, we can include all beings. May all beings be free from suffering, wherever they are, whatever the suffering. May all beings be free from the causes of suffering. Beings find the support, the resources, inner and outer, that they need to meet their challenges. May all beings find peace. And as we're offering compassion out to all beings, let's not exclude ourselves in this. Because like the person next to us, we too have challenges and different forms of suffering. It may not be big at the moment, it may be big. Being able to respond to our own difficulties and challenges with compassion is a very supportive way of meeting the stuff of life that we're experiencing. So maybe just acknowledging any difficulties that are present in your life. And sometimes the difficulties that are present in our life are because we have loved ones who are suffering and we feel that. So that can be a place to offer compassion. That's tough. May I be free from suffering. May I be free from the suffering and its causes, the causes of suffering. May I find the support, the resources that I need to meet the challenges that are part of my life. For the last 10 minutes of the practice, feel free to explore this sense of touching compassion and offering compassion out if you'd like to, or if you prefer to come back to your breath and the body, or another anchor for your attention, whatever works for you tonight. I'll be in silence for the next 10 minutes. as we come towards the end of the practice, maybe once again having a sense of the soft front and the strong back. Really inhabiting a place of openness and stability in the body, in the mind. As a practice like the practice of metta and metta or kindness, loving kindness, mudita, gladness in others, good fortune and success, compassion also is a practice that we develop as a universal practice, a practice where we offer it whenever suffering is present. So we do it without discrimination. And there's an interesting quote from Einstein. He didn't just do E equals MC squared, apparently. He was written to by a father of a boy who... A beautiful boy, according to the letter from the father. This is a little book of letters to and from Albert Einstein. And he was written to by the father of a boy who died at 11 from polio in the 1950s. And Einstein wrote back to him, this is, I don't know if this is a whole letter or an excerpt from it. Anyway, he wrote, "A human being is part of the whole world, called by us universe, a part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts and feelings, as something separate from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. The striving to free oneself from the delusion is the one issue of true religion. Not to nourish the delusion, but to try to overcome it is the way to reach the attainable measure of peace of mind." So Mr. Einstein there, Dr. Einstein there, giving some encouragement to see ourselves as interconnected, see ourselves as part of a whole, and through practice to not exclude any from that whole. An interesting quote from Einstein. And for me, that recognition, and I've got the quote up there by Thomas Merton too, the whole idea of compassion is based on a keen awareness of the interdependence of all living beings, which are all part of one another and all involved in one another. For me, those kinds of ideas also support us to think about how compassionate we are to the world that we live in, and to see ourselves as part of the web of life, not separate from it. And so as we tread on this earth and as we use its resources, and the resources of the living world, I think compassion can help us to live more sustainably as well, keeping in mind what underpins all life, and that we are all part of the web of life. So interested to have any feedback or reflection on the compassion meditation that we did. What did you notice? How was it? Did you have a good sleep, if that's what you did?
I think when you are saying soft front, referring to soft front and strong back, I came to understand that the strong back is an understanding of having a courage that can allow us, that can motivate us to open to anything that arises in front of us in day-to-day life, or anything on news. The courage to be with that situation, with that feeling, with that creature or human being or whoever it is. So soft front and strong back is the, I understood it as courage to be open to anything, whatever, and be with it.
Yeah. And how hard that is. Yeah, and so it's a practice. And we start with the things that we can do and then expand and expand and expand.
And well, there is no distinction between that person, that creator and you. Like you said, sharing our ego.
Thank you. It's not a practice that we do here at Armidale BSWA very much. It's a very, very common practice within Tibetan Buddhism. In Tibetan Buddhism, the compassion is more common as a practice than the metta, the loving kindness. We tend to do more in the loving kindness practice, and they're both great, they're both wonderful. But I thought, given that it was something that we don't do a lot of as a specific practice, it's worth just having a taste of here. And it's a bit harder than the metta, because it does require us to be in the presence of suffering, and that's hard.
It requires more action as well?
Pardon?
Requires more action as well?
Yeah.
Compassion than metta. Metta is kind of more well-wishing, being happy.
Yeah.
That's kind of, I think, practice within a room, and compassion we go out with.
Yeah, and both have a place in the room, and both have a place in life. We can practice and orientate ourselves, because as we do it imaginatively in our meditation, we are strengthening the likelihood that that's where we'll act from in real life, in both of them, I think. And for me, that is an important part of the practice. It's not to be done sitting inside by oneself just for one's own benefit. It is about how we then act in the world. and it's important to, and it's useful to do it on one's own as a practice, because it supports us to be able to do that engagement in the world, build up that courage, that strength, that capacity to be with discomfort and suffering, and stay open and loving and engaged in those situations. Not always easy. Any other reflections, challenges?
I actually found the compassion meditation easier than the loving kindness. Because loving kindness, they sort of try and help to generate the feeling of loving kindness, but that's a bit broad.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with compassion, you can hone in on, like you got us to do, one particular person or animal. And so you could sort of have more focus.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to sort of feel compassion than to try and make yourself feel this broad sense of loving kindness, which often I find very difficult in the meditation.
Yeah.
I preferred that actually.
Okay. Yeah. That might be one that, at least at the moment, suits you well. And talking about the connection between loving kindness and compassion, I've got this little anecdote. I sometimes, when I'm driving, and I was doing a few years ago a lot of driving on the freeway, would practice loving kindness on the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that person in the red Honda, have a great day, I hope your day is really good, you know, may it be filled with whatever you want, da 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 da. Okay, that truck driver, da da, I hope you have a wonderful day, may it go well. Okay, the bus driver, so I'd be finding individuals on the road and sending out loving kindness. And so I was building up that as a practice for a period of time. And then one day I was driving down the freeway in my little I-20, not super powered, but I do have a little bit of a lead foot, so I wasn't dawdling. And I looked in my rearview mirror, and all I could see were these two big headlights of this truck, which must have been like this far from me. And my immediate response was, oh, what's caused you to drive that way? You know, what's happened in your life that this is makes good sense in driving? And I thought, oh, how good that that was my immediate response, rather than, getting cranky with the driver, which can also happen. So I had a sense that the practice had primed me to have a response that was caring and compassionate and didn't cause either of us additional aggravation from the situation. No, he wasn't driving sensibly. It wasn't a wise way to drive, but was me getting unhappy about that going to help anybody? Or, you know. So it was an interesting experiment, and to see the fruits of it in that way. As I mentioned, there is growing research into compassion practices and the cultivation of compassion. So I thought I'd just mention a little bit of it to see. I've written some of it down. So what have we got? So this particular research at Emory University, participants were given the chance to help someone else while their brain activity was recorded. Helping others triggered activity in parts of the brain that are activated when we receive rewards or experience pleasure. So there's been quite a lot of research done showing that helping others, being kind to others, actually brings the same or more pleasure than we get from gratification of our own personal desire. And the researchers concluded that, you know, our brain is wired to respond to others' suffering, and it makes us feel good when we can alleviate that suffering. Practicing compassion strengthens relationships, parenting, intimate partner, friendships and work relationships. It's good for our physical health. It decreases stress hormones, and engages the parasympathetic nervous system and decreases our heart rate. When we are sensitive to the suffering of others without that compassionate desire to alleviate their suffering, that actually causes people to avoid being with the person who's suffering because it doesn't feel good. That's actually a distressing situation and can feel overwhelming. As we train ourselves in care for each other and in compassion training, it means that the suffering of the others isn't perceived as a threat to our own well-being, but an opportunity to reap the psychic rewards from the goal of connecting and alleviating. Does that make sense? There's some heads nodding. Compassion training also apparently increases our ability to notice more possibilities, to take others' perspective, and helps us to perform better on cognitive tasks, even decreasing the incidence of heart disease and cancer. One of the quite famous quotes of one of the Dalai Lama's teachers was, who had been taken prisoner by the Chinese when Tibet was invaded and subject to many, many years of torture. He finally did get out and escaped into India. He is reported to have said his biggest fear during all the time he was being tortured by the Chinese was that he would lose compassion for his torturers. Mm-hmm. So that's the possibility for us. That's the potential. But he had, as you know, many of the Tibetan monks done tens of thousands of hours of compassion training, compassion as a practice. So if we're not there yet, it's all right. And compassion, I do want to say that compassion doesn't mean we don't have boundaries. You know, compassion might actually involve a no at times. I was talking to somebody I know whose son has been for many, many years on drugs, and has that the impact on their family life has been significant. And how she is managing the relationship involves the soft front, the tenderness, the sensitivity, and some very clear boundaries so that the others in her family aren't adversely affected by this person. So boundaries can be part of compassion as well. It's not a passive, you know, walk all over me kind of thing. That's not, you know, is it compassionate to your 10-year-old kid to let them sit up all night watching TV, eating junk food, and not going to school? So compassion does also require us to be the adult in the relationship at times and have clarity of what is appropriate and acceptable behaviour. One of the nice reflections on these practices, I think, is that as we do these practices that are generative of very positive ways of being, very positive qualities, we're here in Armidale doing it, and down the road somewhere else there's another group of people who are also engaging it. Across in Melbourne there'll be other people, in Sydney we're actually part of a bigger group of humans that are engaging in these practices, and so it can be nice sometimes just to pause and reflect that there's actually lots of people doing this who are concerned about supporting themselves, cultivating qualities in themselves, so that when they go out into the world, they're doing it in the best way that they can, in a way that's good for everybody. So as we were sending out compassion across the globe in our meditation, there will have been people at exactly the same time in other places doing exactly the same that we were then potentially the recipients of. So they didn't know us, we didn't know them. But there's this intention of extending compassion and care beyond ourselves to others. Sometimes it could be a nice little reflection. Okay, we're getting towards the end. Any questions either connected with what I've been talking about today or something completely different? Completely different is fine too.
Not to be the party pooper. How
party pooper.
Many people don't even have no compassion, don't want to be present.
Mm.
They take drugs. They cause mayhem. They drink. And they don't want to know.
Mm.
They're just not here. Not.
Yeah.
They're alive and taking resources and causing trouble, but they just don't contribute anything.
Yeah. One of the ways, I mean, I think that there's all sorts of people doing all sorts of things. One of the ways that can be helpful to stay compassionate when we don't see the behaviour of individuals as being very useful is to remember that people end up where they are because of causes and conditions, their genetic material, the influences in their life that they didn't choose. Most of them. Most of the things that happen to us, we don't choose. And who knows if I had been in their situation, would I be making those similar choices? I suspect I might. I'm the product of a certain kind of causes and conditions in my life. And it helps me just to stay in connection with others who I might want to disconnect from, just to remember they didn't. The causes and conditions that brought them to where they are aren't personal. Like we're a set of genetic material which we don't choose. We're born into a family we don't choose. Things happen in our family in terms of relationships splitting up, people dying, illnesses. We don't choose that. Lots of things that happen in our life. Somebody throws a dice and that's where it ends up. So for me that's one way of remaining engaged. But it's absolutely right. There's a lot of people who this doesn't make sense for. What we're doing doesn't make any sense for. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Doug.
There's a saying in Buddhism, you are what you are today because of what you were yesterday, and what you'll be tomorrow is dependent on what you are today. Does that relate to what you've just mentioned about the conditioning of life?
For me, it's also that reminder of, okay, what am I doing right now?
Yeah.
How am I using my life right now? What is occupying my mind? Am I sitting there, you know, thinking thoughts that aren't so useful, or worrying, or da-da-da-da-da? What am I doing right now in terms of conditioning my tomorrow? But if you don't have any sense of that, we just live out life.
When we die, we leave something behind. We all do. So what you are today is what you were yesterday. And you can change it.
You need to know that you can change it. You need circumstances and support, and it needs to make sense. So, you know, there are a lot of factors that will support particular choices, and without those, and with different factors, other choices make sense.
It all comes down to choices, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think our power of, I think we over, my personal view is that we oversell our power of choice, because if I haven't been exposed to certain ideas, if I've only, let's take a very simple example of, say, what you eat. If I've only ever seen people eat 5 or 6 days a week at fast food outlets, I've never seen somebody make a meal from scratch using fruit and vegetables, I'm not going to think about it necessarily. And that's a pretty banal example.
It's actually probably an accurate one nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's all sorts of influences trying to push us in different directions. It actually requires a really strong back not to just go with the flow. And the clear seeing and the pausing and the asking the questions, really. Does this make sense? Is this what's good for me? Is this what's good for others? Is this what's good for our planet?
It's like, because I work with children, and a lot of them, parents won't give them any fruit because they'll say, oh, they don't eat fruit. But I cut up oranges and stuff that I bring in, put them down, and I turn around, they're gone.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, these children are not supposed to like fruit.
Yeah.
Because I'm providing it and giving it to them.
Yeah.
They're eating it.
Yeah. So you're giving them a really nice additional experience in life that they'll be able to draw on at other times.
Hopefully they'll go home and say, I've had oranges today. And sometimes I've got different fruits in and things that parents don't buy. Making prunes and all sorts of things for them to try.
Oh, lovely. Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much, Catherine, for your talk tonight. It was very good. Thank you. I noticed you bought a couple of big books there.
Yes.
Are they recommended reading?
In particular, in terms of cultivating compassion, Mindful Compassion by Paul Gilbert and Children is a nice...